April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, so to help spread awareness about this important cause, we spoke Thursday afternoon with Jacqueline Franchetti, founder of Kira's Champions, a nonprofit organization advocating for policies to keep children out of danger, which she founded in the wake of the 2016 murder of her daughter, Kira, who was shot twice in the back by her father during a court-sanctioned unsupervised visit. This year, Jacqueline is lobbying Albany for the adoption of a handful of different bills, including a comprehensive overhaul of the state's family court system. Welcome to the show, Jacqueline, and thanks for joining us.
Dave, thank you so much for having me.
So, if you're okay with it, I was hoping you could explain the tragedy that befell your life, which helped transform you into an advocate for reforming the system that really failed you and your family.
You know, like many of your listeners, I heard the messages to get out of an abusive relationship, and I left when I was pregnant to keep Kira safe. What we aren't told is what happens once we leave, because the abuse doesn't end when you leave a relationship with an abuser. And when you end up in family court, the abuse gets worse. And what happened to Kira can happen to someone you know or love. It can happen to your child, your grandchild, your sister, your brother, your cousin, your friend, your neighbor. Because in July of 2016, when Kira was a fiercely independent, happy toddler who loved Elmo and Mickey Mouse, who had just learned to roll down a hill. And Dave, she rolled down a couple of times. She got up and she looked at me and she said, "I did it, Mama, I did it." When she was just 28 months old, her father shot her twice in the back while she slept. He then poured gasoline all over his home, and he killed himself in a murder-suicide. My daughter, who was only 28 months old, her murder was 100% preventable. Her father wasn't mentally ill. He wasn't abusing drugs or alcohol. He was an abuser, and he wanted to hurt me. We were going through a custody case in Nassau County, New York, on Long Island. And everyone knew from day one that he was suicidal. And if anyone who was involved in Kira's case had stood up for her or tried to protect her, Kira would be alive today. When I first walked into court, you know, like many of you who are listening today, I thought that our court system would keep Kira safe, but we can't trust our court system, and we need to change that. When I went in and I told the judge that I was being stalked, harassed, threatened, abused, Judge Peterson in Nassau County Family Court yelled at me to grow up. That was her response. We had Child Protective Services involved in Kira's case. And even though they noticed that he had extreme anger and rage issues, an inability to care for my daughter, Kira, they labeled it as, quote unquote, low risk and no domestic violence. We had a mental health professional who was involved in Kira's case. These are called forensic evaluators. And there's a whole host of problems with the forensic evaluators in child custody cases. And even though he had documented evidence, eyewitness accounts of things being wrong, he noted in his report that Kira's abusive father should have joint custody because, quote unquote, a father should always play a role in a child's life. Well, Dr. Larry Cohen was right. Her father did play a huge role in Kira's life. He murdered her. We had an attorney for the child who was involved in Kira's case. And this is someone who's supposed to protect her interests. And I begged him repeatedly to please get more involved in Kira's case. He refused. Even 5 days before she was murdered, he refused to do more. And at our last court hearing before Kira was murdered, Judge Peterson said, quote unquote, "This is not a life or death situation." She was wrong. And because of Judge Peterson, Kira will never grow up. And what happened to Kira is happening far too often. In New York State alone, Kira is one of 18 children who's been murdered by a father or a mother because of the failings of New York State's family court system while going through a separation, child custody case, divorce, or child support. That's not okay. That's unacceptable. And we need to change that.
It would have been understandable after what you experienced if you wanted to, you know, keep all that private and really just try to move on with your life. But you chose, you know, a starkly different path, becoming a proponent of political change. And I'm curious, why was that the right course for you? And how did you take that first step into becoming an activist for change?
After Kira's murder, I started doing a lot of research and reading. And I was shocked to find out how often this is happening, not just in New York State, but also around the country. And I couldn't believe that this has been happening for so long and no changes have been made. And if someone had done this prior, a few years ago, Kira could be alive today. So I knew I needed to get involved and try to bring about change. Because unless changes are made, another child will die, and that's not okay.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking with Jacqueline Franchetti, who became an advocate for overhauling the state's family court system after her 2-year-old daughter was murdered by her father during a court-sanctioned unsupervised visit. As you began to get active, what sort of learning curve was there for you, both in terms of understanding state law and the state political system that you were trying to, you know, bend to your will?
It's actually been a wonderful journey, a wonderful learning experience. And Dave, when I first started, I actually first worked on federal legislation. Mm-hmm. And almost 2 years ago, I helped pass a federal resolution, which had wonderful bipartisan support from the New York State Congressional delegation to make child safety the top priority when going through a child custody case, something that's common sense, but not happening in reality. And that measure passed, by the way, unanimously in the U.S. House of Representatives. And from there, I really started to look at New York State, my hometown. How can we fix things here? And I started to meet with representatives from New York. And everyone, I do have to say, they welcomed me with open arms. They understood that there's a problem, and there are wonderful people, wonderful leaders who are out there who want to bring about change, like Assemblyman Andrew Hevesy, Senator James Sanders, Assemblymember Pam Hunter, Assemblymember Dinowitz, wonderful people who really are champions for change and who want to see our children better protected. They all recognize that our system is fatally flawed. We can't trust our court system. We need to do things differently. And there's common sense measures. There's common sense things that we can do today to better protect our children. And we need to enact them.
Well, one of those policies advanced by Assemblyman Andrew Hevesy, a Queens Democrat who chairs the chamber's Children and Families Committee, is legislation that would create Kira's Law. What would that do?
Kira's Law is common sense legislation, and it does three things that are going to help to better protect children immediately once passed. The first thing that it does is it makes the health or safety of the child the top priority when you're going through a child custody case. Now, this is something that you'd think, of course, we should be doing, but we're not. But it's not happening in reality. We need to weigh this and make sure that a child is going into a safe home and not into an abusive environment to better protect the child. The second thing that it does is it's going to mandate judge training around family violence, child abuse, and trauma. Our judges are not well trained. The judge in Kira's case, she was a brand new judge. So she should have gone through all the training before entering the bench, and she did not understand family violence or child abuse. And it's not just the judges like Judge Peterson who don't understand it. There are still judges that are out there who may be better qualified, but are still court ordering children into the homes of an abusive parent. And we have to stop this practice. I actually had one judge who said to me, when I told them about Kira's murder, she looked at me and said, "Don't worry, you're young, you can have another." meaning I could have another child. Our judges need to understand our children are not replaceable. And they need to be taking these situations and understand that these are life and death situations. We need to be putting the safety of our child first to protect them. And the third thing that Kira's Law does is it stops common practices that put children in jeopardy. So, for example, I kept hearing during Kira's custody case, well, just because he was abusive to you doesn't mean he'll be abusive to the child. Look, no abuser sits there and then waits for their child to turn 18 and then says, okay, now I'm going to abuse you. That doesn't happen.
The proposal also takes kind of a new approach to the issue of parental alienation. Can you explain that topic and, you know, how Kira's Law would sort of twist our thinking on it, our conventional thinking on it?
First of all, parental alienation is junk science. It's the equivalent of saying that smoking's good for you. Parental alienation syndrome is not accepted by the American Medical Association. It's not accepted by the American Psychiatric Association. It's not in the DSM-5, which is the Bible for mental health. And it is used as a weapon by abusers in family court today. And what happens is parental alienation syndrome trumps child abuse. So if you have a parent who is abusing the child and you have another parent who's being labeled as an alienator, a non-offending parent, a safe parent, a protective parent who is trying to protect their child from being abused, you actually run a risk of losing custody of your child. And there was a recent study that was done, and it was commissioned by the National Institute of Justice. And what it shows is that when you look at abuse cases, 28% of moms are losing custody of their child to the abusive parent because of parental alienation. It's upside down and backwards. And when you look at what happens if someone comes in and alleges child sexual abuse in a case, you have an 85% chance of losing custody of your child to the rapist. That's not what should be happening. And I'll share with you, once you get labeled with the scarlet letter A in family court, you lose custody. I was being labeled as an alienator in Kira's custody case. And I don't know if I would have maintained custody of Kira when we went through our family court case because of parental alienation. We need to stop this practice from being used. It's not based on research, and it shouldn't be used in our family court system.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our discussion with Jacqueline Franchetti, founder of Kira's Champions, a nonprofit organization advocating for policies to keep children out of danger, which she founded in the wake of the 2016 murder of her daughter. When we get back, we'll talk about the lack of transparency in the family court system, what Jacqueline's life is like now, and much more.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.
We're continuing our conversation with Jacqueline Franchetti, founder of Kira's Champions, a nonprofit organization advocating for policies to keep children out of danger, which she founded in the wake of the 2016 murder of her daughter, Kira, who was shot twice in the back by her father during a court-sanctioned unsupervised visit. Before the break, we were talking about a recently introduced piece of legislation that would implement reforms to the family court system aimed at ensuring other families don't suffer the same loss as Jacqueline. Economic inequalities between parents can often influence who's going to end up getting the upper hand in negotiations or court rulings that might come down from a family court judge or other administrative decision makers. Does this bill begin to address that in any way, shape, or form?
It does. One of the things that Kira's Law does is allow for an early evidentiary hearing to determine if there's child abuse present or family violence present. And this is something that is different for the court system because right now you wait until trial. Well, in Kira's case, she was murdered in July of 2016. Our court case wasn't scheduled until October of 2016. And I kept being told, well, you can bring that forward at trial. You can bring that forward at trial. Well, Kira was dead by the time the trial occurred. She was already murdered. So what this allows is for an early evidentiary hearing just around the abuse to protect the child. And if a judge determines that there is abuse, what Kira's law also allows is for the abuser to pay the legal fees of the safe, non-offending parent. And this is something that would help to, you know, equal out the scale. Right now, what abusers do is they try to bankrupt the other party to force them to go pro se in court, recognizing that if someone's pro se and defending themselves, they have a higher likelihood of losing custody of the child. We can't continue to let that happen. Our domestic violence organizations, who are wonderful and fantastic, and many have pro bono legal services, they are overwhelmed. And many people can't find the help that they need. And they're going into court to defend themselves, and they're losing as a result. And that's a practice that does need to stop.
What do you think of so-called father's rights groups?
As far as I'm concerned, look, you have to look at what's happening to the child. I think that there are wonderful fathers who are out there. I have a great dad who's played a major influence in my life. And there are wonderful moms who are out there. But there are abusers on both sides. And what we need to do in terms of the legislation is make sure that we have the child's best interest first. The child needs to be protected when we go through family court. And that's everything that I'm working on in terms of Kira's law and the other bills that are also before the legislator in terms of protecting children from abusive parents, regardless if they're a father or a mother. We need to better protect our child.
Do you think the state's family court system has enough resources to adequately do its job? And, you know, if there were, say, more judges and, you know, Judge Peterson or whoever had your case got, you know, to spend more time with it and wasn't, you know, shuffling between a bunch of cases, or the lawyer who was supposed to be looking out for Kira, you know, was either better compensated or had fewer cases, would they have done a better job? But it sounds like you're thinking that the resources aren't so much the problem as the rules and procedures that the system operates by.
The rules, the procedures, and the training are major issues. And while, yes, we do need more judges and we do need more attorneys for the children, if they're not trained properly, that's not going to fix the problem. It's when it comes to child abuse, family abuse, and trauma, these are, when you look at family court cases, these are not complicated. It's not complicated to keep a child safe. But if you don't understand the dynamics, you are more likely to get these dangerous situations wrong. And there's one expert who explained this to me really well when I was speaking with them. And they said, it's the equivalent of somebody walking into your room right now. And it's sunny outside. They're without an umbrella. They're bone dry. And they look at you and they say that it's pouring outside. You're not going to believe them. But if you understand the dynamics of child abuse and family abuse and how victims react. You know, there are victims who will get on the stand who will laugh or smile when they're giving responses about the abuse. And someone would sit there and say, hey, you're lying. They're not. Those are defense mechanisms. If you can't properly understand and identify those things, you're going to get them wrong. So yes, we do need more of these things. But before we do that, I think we need to make sure that we have people properly skilled and trained to identify those things.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking with Jacqueline Franchetti, who became an advocate for overhauling the state's family court system after her 2-year-old daughter was murdered by her father during a court-sanctioned unsupervised visit. In January, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced as part of his State of the State address that he was going to be launching a Blue Ribbon Commission to evaluate the work and role of forensic evaluators whose recommendations, you know, can determine which parent prevails in a child custody case or a visitation dispute. Based on your experience and, you know, your advocacy in the years since, do you think this is an area, these forensic evaluators, that are potentially ripe for overhaul and really deserve intense scrutiny?
Forensic evaluators, child custody evaluators, these are right now the wild, wild west. There's no standards, there's no accountability, and there's zero transparency around it. And this is an area that desperately needs our attention and desperately needs to change. You know, right now in New York State, if you have a degree in mental health and you do 6 hours of training, you can be a child custody evaluator. You're making life or death situations about cases, and you don't have the proper or adequate training. And that needs to change desperately. I mean, I had a forensic evaluator in Kira's case who advocated for joint custody and said that the father should always play a role in a child's life in an abusive scenario. That's dangerous. That's the reason, one of the reasons why Kira ended up being murdered. And one of the things that I'm really glad about with the Blue Ribbon Commission is we're going to have victims, survivors of family violence, people like me who've seen what happens when these situations go awry because we don't have people who are properly skilled or properly trained doing these evaluations. And people, victims and survivors are going to be part of this panel, which is fantastic, as well as domestic violence advocates. We need those voices at the table to bring about change. And one of the bills also that I'm working on, in addition to Kira's law, is a bill from Assemblyman Dinowitz that is going to be out sometime very soon regarding forensic evaluators, specifically looking at training for these individuals and for this practice to make sure that they're better trained around family violence, child abuse, and trauma. It's absolutely key and critical that these people are doing these evaluations in a much better way.
My former colleague at the Albany Times Union, Chris Bragg, their state investigative reporter, has also noted that there's, you know, seems to be a lot of secrecy in the family court system, whether it's, you know, evaluations from forensic evaluators that are kept secret or reports on incidents that are just, you know, really hard to access. Do you think there needs to be a lot more transparency in this system overall? And not just with the family court system, but with the state agencies that, you know, administer a lot of this?
We desperately need transparency, accountability, and standards across the board. And specifically, as you talk about the forensic evaluators and these child custody evaluators, their reports right now, you can't touch them. Kira's report, I am not physically allowed to touch, which is a violation of due process. When we went to trial, one of the biggest pieces of evidence that would be used against me, I am not allowed to see. There is another bill that's out there by Assembly Member Weinstein and Senator Biagi. That bill will allow litigants to have access to these reports. We should have access to these reports. We need access to these reports, especially people who are defending themselves, who are going pro se, which is a lot of domestic violence survivors and victims in family court. If you want to see that report, you actually have to take a day off from work, go down to the courthouse to try and get and try and see the report. You can't even take them home with you to prepare for trial. That puts someone who's defending themselves at a significant disadvantage to someone who has an attorney, and the attorney is allowed access to these reports. There's a whole host of problems, but throughout the system, we desperately need standards, we need accountability, and we need transparency.
Finally, you know, listening to you talk about these issues and hearing you call up, you know, bill sponsors, what seems to be by memory, it sounds like this is, you know, a really big part of your life right now. And I'm curious, just, you know, how are you doing, you know, in the wake of your daughter's murder? And what's your life like now?
I miss Kira every single second of every day. On Sunday, she should have turned 7. And I don't get to give her a birthday party. I don't get to try to explain to her how to socially distance or do online learning. In fact, you know, I see posts about that, and I'm jealous of parents who do. My daughter didn't get to grow up, and she should have. And it hurt. And our court system didn't listen. They didn't protect her like they should have. That should have been their first duty. And they failed. And there isn't a day that goes by that I don't think about her, that I don't cry, and that I don't wish things were different. I can't change what happened, but I can make sure that even though her voice has been silenced, her story is told, and her legacy can be one of change. And I hope that her story is used as a force for good. And right now, I'm extremely encouraged by what's happening in New York State with Kira's Law, with the bill that I mentioned from Assemblymember Dinowitz. And there's another bill from Senator Sanders and Assemblymember Hunter on supervised visits that's also designed to protect children. All of these things can help protect another child. What happened to Kira can happen to someone else you know and love, and I don't want another child to die. These are changes that are common sense that can be made tomorrow to better protect children. I don't want anyone to experience the pain that I feel or to have a child like Kira not be able to grow up. It's not what our court system is meant to do. We are in a crisis scenario in our family courts. And it needs to change.
We've been speaking with Jacqueline Franchetti. She is the founder of Kira's Champions, a nonprofit organization advocating for policies to keep children out of danger. Jacqueline, thank you so much for making your time, and thank you for your advocacy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for giving me your time and the ability to talk today.
And to learn more about this issue or get involved to promote change, visit kiraschampions.org. And Jacqueline wants to encourage all New Yorkers, as part of Child Abuse Prevention Month, to speak with their friends and family about child abuse in order to bring this issue out of the shadows and into the light.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.